We are 2 weeks and two... No. Can I start over again? 1 week and 2 days away. I got it all screwed up. I've been waiting so long for the season to start. I can't remember when it starts. 9 days away. This is PFT Live. It's August 26th. And let's get right to it. Sean Gilbert, former NFL player who once held out an entire year in an effort to get the contract that he believed he deserved, is now going to throw his very large hat into the ring because he is a very large man. He's going to run for NFLPA executive director, and I'm intrigued by the reality that this is the first time a sitting NFLPA executive director in decades has faced an opponent for re-election. Back in 2009, after Gene Upshaw, who had that job virtually unchallenged, unquestioned for years and years and years, after he passed 6 years ago this month, there was a scramble, there was a skirmish, there were multiple candidates involved. D'Amore Smith ultimately emerged as, I guess, kind of a compromise candidate because Troy Vincent and Trace Armstrong were the primary contenders for the job. They kind of canceled each other out, and that opened the door for Smith. Also, at the time, the lockout was coming, everyone knew it was coming, and Smith's litigation background made him arguably the ideal candidate. Well, he was reelected in 2012 without any opposition, although there was some rumblings that maybe there would be, and now he's facing opposition from Sean Gilbert. And you know, some of the stuff that Gilbert advocates makes people wonder whether or not Gilbert would be in the NFLPA role the same way that he was as a player, which is, we'll blow it up for a whole year if we need be. He wants to terminate the current CBA, and he believes that there is some sort of collusion that has been happening. As I understand it, it's been happening for a long time, and it's just a matter of finding a player, possibly his nephew, Darrell Revis, to sue the NFL for this collusion that has been apparently occurring in plain sight for an extended period of time. No one knows exactly what form or fashion of collusion there is. There historically has been, from time to time, I believe, collusion. There was collusion in 2010 when there was no salary cap, but the teams apparently, reportedly, allegedly were told to respect certain unwritten rules, and eventually Dallas and Washington were penalized via the loss of significant millions in cap space because they failed to go along. That challenge, that argument that there was collusion, continues. It's been held up on procedural grounds. If we ever get to the question of whether there was collusion in 2010, I think the answer will be yes, there was. Gilbert thinks collusion is still continuing to this day, and his first order of business, and I've read the CBA, if you can prove collusion, the CBA does go away. CBA gets the plug pulled on it. Now, my understanding is Gilbert would not advocate a strike, but here's the thing. If you go back to the bargaining table with no CBA and the owners make their last best offer, then the owners can lock the players out like the owners did back in 2010. So it's a distinction without a difference. Whoever starts the work stoppage, it doesn't matter. The work stoppage flows from a fundamental impasse in the positions of the players and of management. We could have a lockout all over again. I think if there's a lockout this time, you're not going to see the NFLPA give in as quickly as it did in 2011. I think the belief in 2011 was that players ultimately did not want to lose game checks, and D. Smith and company did the best deal they could under those circumstances. I think part of this new regime, if there is one, and I think this is where players have to make a decision, do we want to potentially blow up the CBA? Do we want to provoke a lockout? And are we willing to let it play out? Lawyer Jeffrey Kessler, who currently is taking on the NCAA model and could successfully blow it up, Kessler would like, I believe, to have that full year or longer to let an antitrust case play all the way out and then possibly get the keys to the NFL by the time the damages are done being calculated. So this one could get very interesting, primarily because the election is going to be determined by the time that the player representatives for 2014-2015 are voted upon, and that's coming up in the next weeks or months, because 17 of 32 player representatives, that's all you need to win the election. So the challenge is going to be getting supporters of the various candidates. For now, there's two, there could be more in place. And if you can get 17, if you go in the door with 17 votes, you're going to be the NFLPA executive director come March of 2015. So it's an interesting one to keep an eye on. And another interesting thing to keep an eye on, this whole idea of the four-game preseason. Gilbert advocates shrinking it by 2 games, and also he's willing to expand the regular season to 18 games. Now, in recent months, we've heard expansion of the postseason would be the trade-off for a reduction of the preseason. Remember, the NFL has the unilateral right to cut the preseason in half if it wants to, and the players would lose money. But you know what? Ever since talk of an 18-game regular season has dissipated, you never hear Commissioner Roger Goodell say how bad the preseason is. You used to hear it from him all the time, that the quality of the preseason isn't reflective of what we want from the Shield and yada, yada. You used to hear that all the time when they believed there was a chance to get 18 games. You never hear it now that the 18-game regular season has gone by the wayside, down the drain, insert your metaphor there. Now that Gilbert could be the NFLPA executive director, this 18-game thing gets dusted off. But to get 18 games, I think the players are going to want a lot more money. I think the NFL would rather have 16 games and D'Amore Smith as the executive director than 18 games and Sean Gilbert. And some would look at that and say, well, if the NFL prefers D'Amore Smith over Sean Gilbert, maybe we should want the guy that's going to be not the guy that the NFL would prefer. So it's going to be an interesting several months, and in many respects, it's all going to be decided in the next several weeks. Over the next several weeks, we could see a rookie quarterback actually get a start. And it's amazing to me that 2 years after four rookie quarterbacks started, three first-rounders and a third-rounder in Russell Wilson started week one, we've got no rookie quarterback starting week one. Maybe the first guy to start is going to be Tom Savage, because you have to consider the player in relation to his competition. Case Keenum, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Maybe Tom Savage climbs to the top of that ladder more quickly, especially if the Texans continue where they left off last year. They started 2-0, they lost 14 straight. If they stink out of the gates, maybe you roll the dice with Savage. I'm starting to think there's a chance. We did the poll yesterday on PFT on NBCSN. Which of the three first-rounders will start first? Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, Blake Bortles. Maybe Savage is going to be the first guy that we see in 2014, the first rookie who gets a shot to play. He's already gaining ground on Case Keenum. Could just be a matter of time before Savage becomes the guy who leapfrogs Ryan Fitzpatrick. And keep this in mind. The new coaching staff, the only new quarterback since the new coaching staff has arrived, is Tom Savage. Bill O'Brien inherited both Fitzpatrick and Keenum. Now, chose to keep them, unlike T.J. Yates, who was traded to Atlanta in lieu of being cut. But Savage is the guy that was drafted under O'Brien's watch, and we'll have to see whether or not Savage ends up being the first guy in. But there's a chance that we're going to see Savage play as a starter, because I think we're going to see Johnny Manziel week one against the Steelers. There's a chance we're going to see Savage as a starter before any of the other guys. Something to keep an eye on as the 2014 regular season approaches. Not 2 weeks and 2 days, 1 week and 2 days, 9 days away. Packers, Seahawks. Much sooner than that, we're going to get an update on the St. Louis Rams quarterback position and all things Rams from Jim Thomas of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. As the Rams continue to try to recover from the news that Sam Bradford is gone for the entire year after re-tearing the ACL in his left knee. And then we're going to talk to you. It's PFT Planet Time, as it is most days. We got some Twitter questions. We'll get some phone calls, hopefully. We'll do that to wrap the show. Before that, Jim Thomas. Before that, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Tough balance for Sean Hill to strike there. On one hand, you're devastated that the starting quarterback's not going to be available. On the other hand, you're elated that you get a chance to play. Sean Hill hasn't played much in his career. He's now 34 years old, had 11 games and 10 starts back in 2010. Not much since then. He'll get plenty of work, barring injury, in St. Louis. And joining us now to break it all down, Jim Thomas of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jim, thanks for your time. I want to start with Sean Hill. What attracted the Rams to Sean Hill in the offseason when they could have gone in a bunch of different directions at backup quarterback?
Well, they actually tried to get him the year before, and he opted to return to Detroit for better money, for better financial package. Their quarterbacks coach, the Rams quarterbacks coach, Frank Cignetti, had worked with him in San Francisco. So there was a connection there. And they've even back in the off season, they said he was their top target for backup quarterback. Now that was assuming that Sam Bradford was, you know, was going to play the majority of the games. But he's a good decision maker. He's accurate. He can throw a deep ball better than Kellen Clemens last year's backup. So they liked all that about him. He's really a stickler for preparation. And so I think that all factored in. And, you know, he's not what you would call a scrambler, but, you know, he's got a little bit of escapability where he can, you know, he get out of trouble a little bit. So, again, those were all things that that pointed them in that direction. Now, saying all that, though, Mike, had Kellen Clemens decided to stay, they probably would still have Kellen Clemens this year. The deal with Clemens was the Rams wanted to offer him a one-year contract, and Clemens was able to get a two-year contract with some signing bonus money from San Diego.
And Clemens got that two-year contract in part because he looked pretty good last year. Tough, gritty, durable, 4-3 down the stretch. How big of a drop, if any, do you see from Clemens to Sean Hill?
Well, I think Hill is, because of what we just talked about, his accuracy and his deep ball, the Rams really had to limit the deep game with Clemens because he just couldn't throw the deep ball consistently. What Clemens had is tremendous charisma. He's just a very, very great leader. The team really responded to him and rallied around him. Now, I think Hill has some of those same qualities, at least I'm told he does in terms of leadership qualities, but Clemens was special in that character. So, in theory, I think Hill will be the better quarterback. I mean, I think his career, again, it's not a ton of work. It's just under 1,000 career passes, but I think he's right around 84, 85 in a passer rating. When you look at the state of backup quarterbacks around the league, that's pretty good, and a pretty good touchdown to interception ratio. I do have to say, too, Hill, in the time I've covered the team here, and, you know, I've covered him since they moved there, Hill has been a Rams killer. He's 4-0 in starts against the Rams in three of those four games. He had a 100-plus quarterback rating. So I guess I've seen some of the best of Sean Hill against the Rams. One of those victories was with Detroit, and I think the others were with San Francisco.
In hindsight, Jim, do you think the Rams got it wrong by showing so much confidence in Sam Bradford, almost stubbornly clinging to Bradford, who has 2 years left on his rookie contract, not drafting a quarterback any higher than round six, just kind of having this idea that Bradford is going to be the guy indefinitely into the future?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair second guess. I have no issues myself with Bradford as in terms of talent. Does he necessarily have that magic, that it that would make him an elite quarterback? You know, I don't think we can fairly say that we've seen that, but I think he's a very, very talented quarterback. He's shown signs of developing last year and looked great on the practice field and in the preseason this year. But the injury thing should have been a concern, I thought, and I thought the Rams would, and it was partly based on information I'd received here, that they were going to maybe pop on a quarterback no later than third and fourth round. They definitely weren't going to go first round. And I thought, had they been able to trade down from two to, say, six with Atlanta, say, if Clowney was there, and picked up an additional second rounder, that maybe you pop for a quarterback in the second round. But they didn't. They waited till the sixth round, and there were, at least on paper, there were a lot of good quarterback prospects, you know, all the SEC guys coming out, Jimmy Garoppolo, the Savage guy from Pittsburgh. So there were a lot of options, and so they waited to the sixth round to get the SMU quarterback, Garrett Gilbert. So the first kind of curveball of the draft was like the third round when they drafted Trey Mason, and the Rams, although they're not household names, Zach Stacy, Benny Cunningham, and then Isaiah Pede were good prospects, although Pete's not out for the season. So that surprised me that they took a running back that high. I thought that might be a good spot for a quarterback, a guy that you could groom for a year, you know, in theory, but a guy that had definite starter potential and that maybe at some point would push Bradford.
Coach Jeff Fisher has made it clear that the team has not yet explored other options, opting instead to be patient. The cuts are coming up, 75 today, 53 Saturday. And look, I think that if you show that you're too anxious to make a deal, it's going to cost you more either by salary or by draft picks. But do you believe they're going to sit down and look at all their options and see if there's a way they can bolster the depth chart behind Sean Hill?
Yeah, I find in the long run, over a 16-game season, I find it hard to believe they can go all the way through 2014 with a quarterback core, the entire core, as it is constituted now, that has 26 NFL starts between them. And that's all with Sean Hill. You know, Austin Davis, who's his third year in the system, the former Southern Mississippi quarterback who broke many of Brett Favre's records down there. And he looks like a different quarterback. You know, I'm not saying that he can step in and lead the team if he has to, but he looks, you know, much different. He looks like he may be a keeper, and Gilbert is still very, very raw. You know, the game looks like it's moving a little fast for him. He's shown much better on the practice field, but neither of those guys have played a snap in the NFL, so they have to be looking. There is no need to rush into it. And what if, say, a guy like Christian Ponder comes free? I don't think the Rams have any interest in Sanchez. If they did, they would have signed him last year when he was out there. I know because of the Schottenheimer connection, everybody's connecting those dots, but I just don't see that's happening. And last year, it was around the owners' meeting, Fisher made a brief statement that got a little bit of pub about how, Sanchez is an interesting guy. I think he was just trying to do him a favor. I don't think the Rams were ever. He just didn't want to rip the guy, you know, and say, no, why would we want him or whatever. So, I don't think that's going to happen. Another guy that's kind of interesting to me is Kyle Orton, who supposedly is retired, but he's been released by Dallas. He might be a guy that they could look at. But yeah, of course the Rams are going to look at all these cuts and see what happens in terms of trade value as well.
You know, it's funny. We always look to connect dots and look to past relationships. Sometimes there's a chance that past relationship poisons a future relationship. After all, Sanchez did just well enough to get Brian Schottenheimer pushed out in New York as the offensive coordinator, so a reunion there may not make sense. Here's one that bubbles up from time to time. I've yet to hear the name in this setting. Last year there was a report that a certain five-letter quarterback, not named Favre, but Tebow, was at least discussed by the Rams after Bradford tore the ACL. There was talk in 2012 when Tebow was available in trade from the Broncos that the Rams possibly had interest. Do you see any set of circumstances where the Rams would place a phone call to Tim Tebow's people and say, we'd like to bring you in and see what you have and maybe give you a job?
You know, I wonder if maybe they might bring him in, and no one's told me anything resembling this, but maybe you bring him in for a workout. I just can't see that happening at this stage. It looks like with the addition of Kenny Britt and the what looks like vast improvement by Brian Quick so far, that the Rams finally have some potential to go deep, and I just don't see Tebow as being a match for that. Maybe if they brought him in to be an H-back and handed him the ball, but no, I can't see that happening.
Well, they don't need tailbacks. They have plenty. How do you see the depth chart shaking out once the season gets rolling?
At running back?
Yes, at tailback.
Yeah. Well, I think Stacy will open the season as the starter, and he did tremendous work last year. He had only one carry for 4 yards in 4 games. He was inactive the first 2 games last year, and then almost had 1,000 yards in 12 games. So I think he deserves the right to start and probably will open the season. But he's getting pushed now. Benny Cunningham, undrafted rookie a year ago out of Middle Tennessee State, has had a very good camp, started work with the ones last Saturday in Cleveland, and it looks like he may get the start again this week. So there's a little bit of a competition going on there. As good as Stacy was, you know, it's not like he's been established for 3-4 years or whatever. Trey Mason, I'm sure, will get worked in. He's kind of slowed down a little bit from the start. I definitely say he's the third guy right now. He looks like he's maybe a little heavy-legged. He got a lot of work in the first 2 games and by preseason standards, and he's having trouble with pass pro and the blitz pickup, which is almost understandable given the fact that Auburn, you know, they never threw the football. And that's a big thing for almost all these college feature backs and stars that come in. If you want to play every down, you've got to not only catch the ball, but you've got to pick up blitzes. So that's holding him back a little bit. And just recently, Mike, this Trey Watts, the son of J.C. Watts, the former congressman and an Oklahoma football star, these last 2 games has really made a statement. He was really impressive in last week. Fisher loves collecting running backs. He kept 5 last year, so I could see where all 4 of these guys make the final roster.
And and it becomes more important with the injury to Sam Bradford. Now, on Sunday when Coach Fisher talked publicly about the Bradford injury, I got the impression that the offense isn't going to change. They're still going to do what they had planned to do. I don't know how much I buy that. Do we expect the offense to change at all with Hill in for Bradford?
Well, and I can't tell the precise routes, but they're obviously different quarterbacks throw different routes better. And so maybe there'll be an adjustment there. But as we mentioned earlier, I don't think they'll have to cut down on the deep throws, because although Hill doesn't have a strong arm as Bradford, he still can get it downfield. So I still think they'll throw deep. So and in terms of having a grasp of the offense, even though Hill, you know, is relatively new here, he's a bright guy. He's got all that experience. So if they cut back, it wouldn't be because he doesn't know the offense, but I think there'll be less of a change, and again, I don't think there's any way that it'll be exactly the same as what they did with Bradford, but I think there'll be less of a change than there was with Kellen Clemens.
And receiver's a big part of what a team's able to do or not do in the passing game, and I see Kenny Britt and Brian Quick high up on the depth chart on one side of the field, Tavon Austin, Stedman Bailey on the other. What can we expect reasonably from Britt, who has been a disappointment in recent years, and Quick, who has been a disappointment throughout his career?
Well, that's a good question. They've both started. They've gone with this big lineup all three preseason games, and so I think that'll be how they enter the season, with Austin in there as the slot receiver when they play, or if they start with three wides. They've done a lot of stuff, Mike, in the preseason with those two guys, Britt and Quick, and also the two tight ends, Kendricks and Cook, on the field at the same time. So you have four guys that are 6'3", are taller. And so it's a much, much different look than what we've seen. Britt has been amazing so far, you know, stayed out of trouble, no nude videos on the Instagram or anything like that. His knee's been fine. He's actually, this is hard to maybe fathom, but he's actually turned into a leader in still a very young wide receiver core. So we'll see. We'll see if he can maintain that. I don't think he's a guy that's going to catch 80 balls for you. I do think he's a big play guy that can get downfield and will go up and get the contested ball. It looks like for Quick, the light switch has finally come on, and that's one thing that they've wanted him to do since he came into the league. And Torrey Holt mentioned that Torrey Holt is usually around training camp, but after seeing him for a few days, that he's got to learn to use his body to get the ball, you know, and go up and get the ball. And he's doing that now. He's matured a little bit. I think he realizes this is a huge, huge year for him and his career. Will he be able to carry what he's shown in training camp and in the preseason so far in the regular season? I don't know. And then you have Austin, who struggled, and now admits he struggled with the playbook. He says he's much better off there. They're going to expand his role, do some different things with him. The guy that they're really going to miss in the first four games, who came on a little bit last year and has just caught everything this year, is Stedman Bailey. And that it's going to be tough, I think, without saying that he would be a number one receiver, but he would definitely kind of be their go-to guy. He's got great hands, and so because of the PED suspension, he'll miss the first four games, and that'll really hurt them as they start the season.
And it's hard to know how good the offense is going to be, but a big factor will be field position and turnovers created by what could be a very good defense. I look at that defensive line, Jim, and I say this could be the very best defensive line in the entire NFL. What's your assessment of it?
Yeah, there are a lot of people that feel that way, and you know, why shouldn't they? Especially with the addition of Aaron Donald at defensive tackle now. Kendall Langford and Michael Brockers are still going to start. And you know, rotations are such a big part of defensive line play in the league, especially here with Mike Waffle in St. Louis. And Donald will be their pass rush specialist, at least at the start of his career. When the Rams did their self-scouting at the end of the season, Mike, they thought they lost 10 sacks on plays where either Long or Quinn got around, or both of them, got around the edge. The quarterback moved up, stepped right up the middle of the pocket, and either, you know, threw a pass or scrambled for yardage. Well, that shouldn't happen with Aaron Donald in the lineup. So they have great depth. I mean, guys like Eugene Sims, who very underrated, could start for some teams. William Hayes, who plays about a third of the time and has averaged six sacks a season, playing, you know, about a third of the snaps at the other end. And then you'll have Donald at tackle, and they really like Alex Carrington, who they got from Buffalo as more of a run-stuff guy off the end of the bench. Quinn is, he's only 24 years old. It's pretty amazing long is in his prime. And so, yeah, there's no reason to think that this can't be one of the best, if not the best, defensive line in the season. And you know what? They're going to have to play up to the hype now without Bradford to help this team make something out of the season.
And of all the guys on the team, offensive, defensive, special teams, the one name that everyone's going to focus on come Saturday when the time comes to cut the roster down from 75 to 53 will be rookie defensive end Michael Sam. What's your assessment, Jim, of Sam's chances of making it to the 53-man roster?
You know, with all those, the Rams too deep at all those positions on the D-line that we mentioned, that's eight guys. Fisher likes collecting defensive linemen, kind of similar to running backs, especially pass rushing defensive linemen. So the most fascinating battle of camp has been for the fifth defensive end or ninth defensive lineman spot. The Rams have a undrafted rookie from West Texas A&M, a fellow by the name of Ethan Westbrook. He was in 2012, he was the NCAA Division II National Defensive Player of the Year. Had like 29 tackles for loss, something like 19 and a half sacks, and he's played very well. After the first two games, I would say Michael Sam had played pretty good, but Westbrook's had been better. But I think Michael Sam moved ahead of Westbrook's over the weekend when he gets the two sacks of Johnny Manziel. Sam is, maybe not as athletic as some of the other guys, probably not as Westbrook, but he's a smart player, very determined, plays with a lot of passion. He's got a nasty streak to him on the field, and all those are qualities that Fisher likes, and a lot of coaches would like. So I think Westbrook's and Sam have both shown they're good enough to play in this league. If the Rams, I can't see the Rams keeping 10 defensive linemen. Maybe they do, but that's what it's going to come down to. If they keep nine, who do they keep for those two? And that's why this Miami game Thursday, the last preseason game, is very important for both of these guys.
And, in the preseason, the sacks and the appearances with the defensive have drawn the attention. What do we know about how Sam has looked on special teams? Because that's going to be the key to making a contribution, especially in his first year, is what he can do on special teams.
Yeah, right now it's been kind of limited. And, it's very rare that defensive ends play much on special teams. I know he's been on, like, a PAT field goal block. I think he's got a little time blocking on, punt return and whatnot, and he's looked in practice. He's looked pretty good, surprisingly good blocking on that. But I don't think he's going to have a ton of a role if he makes the team.
Well, we'll see what happens. A lot going on with the Rams, and not exactly an easy division for them to navigate. We'll see what they can do. Jim, thanks for some of your time. We'll be talking to you again down the road, buddy.
Okay, take care.
All right, there he is, Jim Thomas, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Check out his work at stlouistoday.com. Great stuff there. Best way to keep tabs on the St. Louis Rams. Jim is all over it. When we come back, we're going to be all over your questions via Twitter, phone line, etc. But you got to call. 888-237-5269 is the number. That's 888-237-5269. Pick up your phone. Give us a call. We'll be right back with your questions. This is PFT Live. It's PFT Planet time on this edition of PFT Live, like almost every other edition, and what we do almost every other time, if not every time, is take a Twitter question. First one comes from @sunshinegirl29. Who do you think the Seahawks should add, use to return punts, or are you on the Earl Thomas train? Look, if Earl Thomas is the best option they have, then so be it. But you have to be willing to assume the risk that Earl Thomas is going to get injured returning punts. Think back to Jason Sehorn, the great cornerback of the New York Giants. What's it been, 20 years ago? Tore an ACL in that Jets-Giants preseason game, done for the year. And he was returning kickoffs in that game. When you put key players on special teams, you expose them to injury. But you also get the benefit of having key players on special teams. Your special teams get better when you're willing to throw in those extra reps. With each extra rep, it's another chance that you're going to have an injury. And you give Earl Thomas the ball in the broken field, and you have guys diving at him and trying to tackle him and changing directions. There's a chance that an I told you so moment is going to come. Now, I think the the unspoken message in all of this, the fact that the Seahawks would even consider Thomas, it tells you they must feel pretty good about the depth behind Earl Thomas in the Seattle secondary. And they feel pretty good about their system. They feel pretty good about everything about that defense. That if they would lose Earl Thomas, they'd be able to keep rolling just as they always have. But what a great way to create some field position if you've got Earl Thomas returning punts. I think I would hold him for key moments in close games, big games, game against the 49ers, playoff game, something like that. Because if you run that risk constantly of putting the guy back there as the punt returner, you're going to increase significantly the possibility of an injury. Let's go to the phone lines. Drake in Washington, you're on PFT Live. What's up, Drake?
Hey, what's up, man? My question is, I know I may sound crazy asking this, but do you think Sean Hill could potentially have some Mark Folger 2004 year in him where he surprised everybody and lead the Rams to the postseason?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that Rams fans are hoping more for Kurt Warner, 1999, the guy who came out of nowhere when Trent Green suffered an ACL tear in the third preseason game, just like Bradford 15 years later. You want a guy who can come in and get it done. Bulger was the guy who eventually bounced Warner off the roster. And look, there's only 32 of these starting NFL quarterback jobs. Some guys are going to be good, some guys are going to be not good. I think the belief is, if Sean Hill was good enough to be a starter, at some point in the last decade or so, he'd have become a starter. Somebody would have given him an opportunity to compete for a starting job. Some way, somehow, it's going to work out. You don't hang around the NFL until age 34 if you have the talent to be a starter. Sooner or later, you're going to get your chance. And maybe it's just going to come late for Sean Hill, like it came late for Josh McCown last year in Chicago. It all depends on the offense, how you use him. Jim Thomas made some great points. You know, the offense will change because Sean Hill does some things differently than Sam Bradford. He may say throw some routes better, some routes worse. And the ultimate challenge to coaching, it's not imposing your will or your system on the players you have. It's figuring out what the players that you have can do well and do it, and figure out what they don't do well, and here's something revolutionary, not do it. That's what coaching's about. It's about evaluating your own people and coming up with the best ways to use them. That's the challenge with Sean Hill going forward. Next up, let's go to a tweet from @TitansForever. How many NFL teams have the personnel to win a Super Bowl? Is it more than the 12 teams that qualify for the playoffs? Absolutely, it's more than the 12 teams that qualify for the playoffs. Now, this year, maybe there's some separation. Maybe the absolute best teams are better than the worst teams. But one thing that the salary cap and free agency has accomplished over the past 20-plus years, the talent gap has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. This year, I think the Raiders are the only team that don't have a chance to get to the postseason. Sorry. I'm kind of dug into that one. Watch, the Raiders will win the Super Bowl this year. But we've learned all you have to do is get to the playoffs by the skin of your teeth, and you can run the table and win it all. Could be harder to do if that road to Phoenix or Tempe or Glendale or somewhere in Arizona goes through Seattle. Not going to be easy to beat Seattle in their own building, especially if you're the sixth seed or the fifth seed or anything other than the one seed, which the Seahawks most likely will be. But any team other than the Raiders, I think, has the personnel to do it. It's how you use the personnel, because the talent really is more compressed than ever before. And injuries are the key. Look, you take away Sam Bradford for the Rams, much different team. Another quarterback tears an ACL, and I've gotten out of the business of throwing out hypothetical names because then I'm accused of jinxing said quarterback. But you get an injury, a break, a bounce of the ball, whatever, you can make it to the Super Bowl and you can win it. I think the NFL likes that. They're marketing it. Why not us? I think that's the tagline. Why not us? Why not us? And that applies to everybody except the Raiders. Back to the phone lines. Justin in Ontario. You're on PFT Live. What's up, Justin?
Not too much. Mike, how are you today?
Good, buddy.
Quick question. I'm a big Browns fan and obviously very anxious to see how this Josh Gordon situation plays out. If you could just shed some light on what's your take on why it's taken so long and how that's going to affect the decision. And then finally, what your prediction is for the amount of games he's going to miss this year. Thanks.
Well, and thanks for the call. I don't know what in the world is going on here. I just checked because I knew that we'd likely be getting to this topic. Didn't know it would come via phone call. We got a Twitter question on this topic. Is there an update 22 days after the hearing ended? And the answer was no. No update. Now, I still think there's a chance that hearing officer Harold Henderson will decide at the end of the day to do his best Mo Howard impersonation and clunk heads together and work out a deal. And, you know, you can say to Josh Gordon, look, Josh, I'm inclined to suspend you for a 4-year. The NFL is willing to reduce it to 8 games. You probably should consider that offer if the NFL is even willing to offer it. And that's the other part of the equation. The NFL may look at it and say, we don't care about this A bottle, B bottle discrepancy. We don't care that our limit for marijuana concentration is ridiculously low. We don't care that it may have been secondhand smoke. The policy is what it is. It's the product of collective bargaining. The NFLPA could ask for changes to this policy. We're going to apply it as written. If it's applied as written, he's going to be suspended for a full year, 365 days. And that's the thing about this that makes me the most upset. By waiting until August the 26th or later, the Browns won't have the benefit of Josh Gordon until August 26th, 2015 at the earliest. If a ruling comes today, they're going to get him a week and a half before the start of the 2015 regular season. What good is that for anybody? This should have been resolved. And this is one thing the NFLPA should insist on. These one-year suspensions need to be resolved quickly, because the sooner you start the sooner the year ends, the sooner the player is back. Okay, we got one more Twitter question. I believe this one comes from Mason Ballas, and it does. What is the likelihood that Washington finishes the season with both Kirk Cousins and RG3? Feel we are better with both. Right now, I think that they're going to finish the season with both guys, but I also think that if the organization remains blindly committed to RG3, without regard to the fact that an employee of the organization, while calling a preseason game that he was hired by the team to call, and would love to have a greater role with the organization, Joe Theismann, when he is in real time talking about how much better Kirk Cousins would be in this offense, and if there were a competition, Kirk Cousins would be the starter, and Jay Gruden, the head coach, has a decision to make, that tells me that maybe the only way to get the arguably thin-skinned RG3 to not worry about Kirk Cousins, bumping him to the bench, is to get rid of Kirk Cousins altogether. That maybe this isn't a situation where we're trying to flip Kirk Cousins to do better than the fourth-round pick we invested in getting. And maybe this is we need to trade Kirk Cousins. We need to remove the Kirk Cousins threat from the roster. We need a traditional backup who isn't good enough to compete for the starting job. When you've got Theismann out there saying what he said, it's hilarious. He's on Dan Patrick's radio show today trying to basically do a 180. I look at what Theismann said during the game against the Ravens. I look at what he said today. You cannot reconcile the two. During the game, before somebody talked to Joe Theismann, reminding him of the importance of, you know, remaining employed by the team at a time when most other opportunities have dried up, you don't want to upset the proverbial apple cart by talking about how Kirk Cousins should start at a time when there's a quarterback who has shown to be fairly thin-skinned. So, Cousins, some think, is the better option. Some think Cousins stinks. Either way, I think that issue is going to linger unless somebody makes the team an offer that it can't refuse, but less likely to refuse it if it means getting Griffin in a position where he doesn't have to worry about Cousins. And Griffin will worry about Cousins. Griffin will worry whether that next bounce pass or overthrow or bad decision is going to be the one that gets Jay Gruden to persuade the owner. And that's the key player in all this, the owner. Once the owner decides to greenlight it, then to truly greenlight it, not half-heartedly greenlight it like he did last year when Griffin was benched by Mike Shanahan. If the owner ever says, you know what, Theismann may have a point and we want to win football games here, maybe it's good to have Cousins around, and maybe it's bad for Griffin if he is. All right, that's it for today's show. Thanks for sticking around. We'll be back here again tomorrow at noon Eastern time with another edition of PFT Live. Special edition of Pro Football Talk tonight with some amalgamation, some blending, some mixing of the Fantasy Football Live show. We're 1 hour from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern time tonight with some fantasy football elements. I think the drafts are either happening or they're going to happen. I always push mine as late as possible because, you know what, if your draft was before Saturday and you had Sam Bradford, you're not real happy right now. Hopefully you'll be happy when you check out ProFootballTalk.com. We're always open around the clock. See you then. See you here. See you wherever. Have a good day.